evening and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet, and I'm in the studio here with Patty Fink. And our guest today is Don Mason, who is from AIDS Services Dallas. Also with us today is, I'm wondering why I'm not getting any sound at all. This is what happens from, well, it kind of seemed like it. My actual wire went somewhere, but I'm not plugged in because it's, what is it, like 3 in the morning? And I'm confused, but we have Alex back with us. Alex just got back from a trip to Japan. And still no sound here, but that's okay. It doesn't really matter what I'm hearing. It's whether or not we have listeners who can hear us, I guess. And am I just babbling this morning? Yeah, Patty is going. She's just looking at me.
Sadly, I'm not willing to share my coffee, so, tough.
And thank you very much for that. So our guest today is Don Mason of AIDS Services Dallas, and my notes are back there. Alex, could you hand me my notes? Because I don't know who this guy is. He's laughing because, yeah, I know who he is. Welcome, Don.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Yeah, I'm sure. Was that like the best introduction you've ever gotten?
Oh, absolutely.
Just 5 minutes of babbling. Well, just one of those days. Tell us what AIDS Services of Dallas actually does.
Well, we do a lot of things, but our primary focus, of course, is housing. And we provide apartments for individuals and families affected by AIDS and have been around since, well, we were incorporated in 1987, but we were around in one form or another since 1983 in Dallas. Of course, along with housing, when you have people 24/7, 365, you do home care for people who need it, people who help other people with activities of daily living, for those in wheelchairs and those dealing with neuropathy or other problems associated with HIV, AIDS. We have a food service program. We have, of course, a maintenance staff that does the upkeep and does the make-readies. And we do... we were a licensed home repair operator for a number of years because when we took these slums over, we had to gut them and redesign them and reconfigure them for people with disabilities. Mm-hmm. So we've done a lot of construction work, a lot of rehab work. We've done new construction. We, of course, have medical case managers or registered nurses who monitor the care that our residents are accessing. In many cases, people with one affliction or another, be it blindness or mental health issues, people who can't manage their meds appropriately, we have the nurses or the medical case managers who actually divvy them out in a pill box for the residents who can then take them accordingly. Or we have home health aides who then go remind people to take their meds at the appropriate hour. I mentioned our food service program. We have a volunteer program that involves more than 1,000 people every month from various community organizations, churches, gay and lesbian groups, neighborhood groups, who provide the evening meal at one of our 4 facilities, and that saves us a ton of money. Sure. And it provides an opportunity for a lot of our residents to interact with people outside of ASD.
Now, here's one of the things that I don't know if you ever knew this about them. You know, the good, solid housing organization that takes care of lots and lots of people, gives them a place to live. The people who would have no other place to live. So they bought these old, run-down apartment buildings in Oak Cliff, started with Revlon and Hillcrest House.
No, started with Ewing first.
Ewing first.
Right, and then Revlon.
And you would think, okay, well, that's nice. So they took these old buildings and they made them livable. So livable that this is the only AIDS housing organization that's had its apartments included on a tour of homes.
It's true.
Check it out, Don. Wow.
With a lot of help from our friends.
Tell us what was it? Just one particular apartment that had been included, or were there several that had been redecorated? What was included on the tour?
The Revlon apartments with the beautiful gardens that we have in the courtyard, and Ewing Center, and it would have been around 1996, after we added the new addition to add the elevator and connect all the floors, remove all the barriers, make everything wheelchair accessible. also with a lovely garden and a waterfall and a pond. All of our buildings have ponds and waterfalls. We're big believers in water. Mm-hmm. I forgot to mention case management. Mm-hmm. We do case management, of course, and we do transportation, limited transportation. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
That's okay. We're it's what 4 a.m. and we're just. Yeah. We're just
I'm thinking just in case my staff is listening, they're going to say, "Well, you forgot my department."
No, he didn't. He just can't think straight at
right.
this hour.
In more ways than one.
Right.
When you first opened, a lot of the coverage that we did around AIDS at 30 over the last month and that most newspapers and others did had to do with going forward, what the what's going on with AIDS, what's going to happen, what research is being done. But you and I, before the show, were just talking a little bit, and your history really is an interesting thing. And nobody wanted to dwell on the past with AIDS. Everybody knows we all lost a lot of friends. And but this part of your history I really love. You were first started as the PWA Coalition of Dallas.
That is correct. Well, we still are the PWA Coalition. That's our corporate name.
And nobody knows you as that. They know you as AIDS Services Dallas. That's your DBA.
Right.
What happened with that name?
Nothing. Nothing at all. It didn't take me long after I started this work when I would introduce myself to a group of people. My name is Don Mason. I'm then the executive director of PWA Coalition of Dallas. Mm-hmm. And I would get these mysterious looks, mm-hmm. like, what in the hell is that? Mm-hmm. And then I began to realize, well, the first word that they understand is coalition, and immediately think politics. Mm-hmm. And had nothing at all to do in the name with HIV or AIDS. And so I went to my board and said, we've got a problem. We've got a big problem. Nobody knows what PWA Coalition of Dallas is. And, of course, they countered and said, well, people with AIDS know what it is. Well, I'm not sure they all know what it is, mm-hmm. but... of course, people that were activists in those days were very much attuned to what was happening in the community, and they did know. But it didn't take long for my board to understand the problem. And as I mentioned, those were the days with real phone books, or phone books that mattered, instead of cluttered your hallway. And people couldn't find us because they didn't go to P in the phone book when they were sick. They went to look for AIDS. So I suggested to my board that we keep our corporate name, but we hold ourselves out as AIDS Services of Dallas so people could find us. And so that's why we do business as AIDS Services of Dallas. Although we're very proud of our name and we keep it, and I think we're one of very few, if any more, PWA coalitions alive around the world. I'm sure there must be some, but mm-hmm. I think in retrospect it was a good thing that we did change our name.
And
we didn't change our name. I mean, we did the DBA. Right. Assumed name.
And you mentioned you have like 1,000 volunteers. How many patients do you serve? And
residents?
Residents. How much staff do you maintain?
As of yesterday, we had 166. We have, I believe, 6 rooms waiting for the Dallas Housing Authority to...
You can't use that word that you use to get
no,
there.
I won't use any of those words. We're waiting patiently for the Dallas Housing Authority to enable us to move in residents who qualify for housing at one of our buildings. They're all ready. We're just waiting for the bureaucrats to sign the dotted line, although we have been known to move in people who are desperate, waiting for housing quality inspections and so on.
So, in other words, red tape.
Lots and lots and lots of red tape.
Are we being
polite? He's being very restrained, yes.
I am being very restrained.
But I heard some slow italics and underlining.
You did.
Yeah. So,
I was thinking on the way over here.
What? These people just live on the streets and get sicker while we do the paperwork. That's
right.
What he's saying.
Right.
And another interesting fact about ASD is that Don is probably, and I mean, there's no way to actually figure this without calling every single AIDS organization in the country, he's probably the longest-serving director president or whatever of an AIDS organization in the country. Do you know of any that are, have
Do
served longer?
Do you want to even acknowledge him with that?
He's calling me old.
I am calling you old.
And I don't know of anybody longer, but that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm the longest serving, but I'll accept the accolade.
Certainly one of the longest serving. And one of the reasons for that is that so many of the original directors, like John Thomas at the AIDS Resource Center, were HIV positive themselves. So many of the people who founded these organizations were, well, I'm healthy now, but I want to help other people, make sure that the services are there when I need them. And so many of them needed them.
That's very, very true.
Yeah, so we lost so many of the original directors.
Sure, because in those days there were no medications that were helping people live. Mm-hmm. That didn't hit the streets here until 1996.
Mm-hmm. And it was a stunning time when, you know, days and weeks and then days, every day you'd hear some sort of news that somebody got sick or somebody had passed away. Just an amazing time.
Those were the days of TWT, mm-hmm. and the Dallas Voice, you know, free obits, and it was just incredible to open up the paper every week and see all these people you knew. Mm-hmm. It was a horrible time.
Right.
Yeah, they're not around anymore.
And you've just simply outlived them.
Well,
living a normal...
He's calling you old again.
I know he is.
But you know what? You have a little competition here. I think that maybe Mr. Tappet might be... You know, maybe the oldest person here.
Let's see. Alex wasn't born when the show went on the air.
And also, you know, in fairness, there were a lot of people from the gay and lesbian community that stepped forward to help out. Mm-hmm. People whose friends were sick and dying. Those were rough days. Those were really rough days.
You know, there's a kind of a sentiment out there, I think, among the history of women's rights, where women, you know, in the 60s and 70s were sort of aligning together, obviously, to you know, advance their own equality and our own equality, you know, forward. But that crisis really brought the gay and lesbian community, mm-hmm. really together in a way that they'd never been united before.
Absolutely. In fact, I should mention that, looking back in history, our supper club, which has been around since the earliest days, began when the press was covering the picketers at Ewing Center, or it was called A Place for Us in those days, but then they got Revlon, and we didn't know whether to change Revlon to A Place for Them and put the heteros there, or maybe keep the name Revlon Apartments and change Ewing to Max Factor. But anyway, there was a lot of press coverage, and we have videos of the picketers and the news media that showed a false address. But there was a woman in real estate in Oak Cliff, a lesbian, who recognized the property and felt horrible that this was the reception that people were getting, and went to introduce herself and welcome the people who were living there, and saw a bunch of gay white men who were hungry. And she went home and called her friends, and they brought the first meal. Mm. And their group got so big that they split into two, mm-hmm. and then three. And then church groups began to come, and other people from the gay and lesbian community came. And that's how our supper club started. Mm-hmm. It was an act of compassion that came from the lesbian community in Oak Cliff.
Mm-hmm. And what you just kind of glossed over was these were old, broken-down properties in Oak Cliff that nobody wanted. They were in North Oak Cliff, but a slummy section there. And Aid Services Dallas bought these properties, renovated the properties, to the point where they were on the tour of homes, but
raise property values.
It did raise. You know, it's not usual that an agency would raise property values. I remember when the Resource Center here in Oak Lawn was opened, and Brian's house was one block away. They had to get zoning variances because residential areas didn't want too many agencies within too many blocks of each other, because it would bring down property values. And like Ewing House, it didn't. Okay. That property where Resource Center is was purchased for $235,000. It's worth a couple of million dollars now. Same thing with your property. They were demonstrating about this agency coming in and destroying the neighborhood.
Correct.
Yeah, and destroying the neighborhood. It was that neighborhood so much better than it ever was.
Well, it was a lot of AIDS ignorance as well,
sure,
as homophobia. I have about six pictures from before my time, mm-hmm, including one where Jesse Jackson crossed the picket line to shame the neighborhood, and another with a picketer and his sign that says, "No gays, no AIDS colonies, keep Oak Cliff safe," and something I don't remember. But we have that picture.
Likely misspelled somewhere in there. Oh.
I'm sure it was. We have a photo of that hanging in our office.
Well, and good thing he was successful, because can you imagine any gay people in Oak Cliff?
Well, in 1987, I don't know how many gay people were in Oak Cliff. But
I was.
But we were there.
I was. Yeah, because I moved into Oak Cliff.
Because you're older.
Because I am older. I moved to Oak Cliff. I bought my first house in Oak Cliff in 1981. And we weren't the first. I promise you. Although I think we were the only ones on our block. And our neighbors were delighted that finally the gays are arriving. the block will come up in value. They just didn't understand that we weren't the handy type. They wanted a couple of lesbians, actually. But then how did ASD actually start? You didn't start as a housing organization, did you?
No, our roots go back to a group, unincorporated, as I remember hearing from Dennis Vircher and others that were around and covered the stories. We emanated from a group called Oaklawn Mail and Message Service back in the days when real people answered the phone during lunch hours for doctors and lawyers, and handwrite messages back in the days when people could write.
I think about it, well, there's an app for that.
Right,
you know, that's
exactly.
What today's world is like.
And then they also did bulk mailings, which provided PWAs in those days an opportunity to get some income and hopefully save their apartments or save their housing and give them a chance to make some money in a low-stress occupation. And that floundered for a few years, and then Phil Gerber, the guy who was the leader of that, died unexpectedly or committed suicide, one of the two. Actually, Dennis Vircher wrote a story the month after I started in March of 1989 that outlines our history. And that was the same time that Oaklawn Community Services had lost their two houses over on Nash Street that they fixed all up and then got a thank you, but you've got 30 days to move notice, which is then led to some news stories, and that brought Evelyn Petty into contact with Daryl Moore and Mike Murdian, who were the founders of our organization, because they purchased what was called an industrial hotel. That's what Ewing was called in 1922 when it was built. But a large rooming house, 22 units. And she took a fourth or fifth lien position, I believe, a vendor's lien on Ewing. And that's when they incorporated, April 28, 1987. So that's our corporate beginning date. And then, of course, Revlon was picked up about a year and a half later in a foreclosure, Revlon being right behind Ewing. And then we have one building that we built from the ground up, which was a piece of cake. Mm-hmm. New construction is wonderful. I love new construction. And then we were working on Hillcrest at the same time. Hillcrest is a low-income housing tax credit program. And that gave us the money, and along with some loans, and each property structured a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. But those are our roots.
Started, yeah. I just find it interesting how a lot of these organizations started that you think are so institutionalized and they're just part of our community now. They really started off as a little mailing service or just doing something to help. And it was just, they were all just grassroots efforts.
And even earlier than that, people having coffee or mm-hmm. in their living rooms talking about a need.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
You're listening
Definitely.
To Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON-FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Patty Fink. And we'll be back with more right after this.
KNON Sunday Blues Social would not include a celebration of life and legacy of Cousin Lenny. KNON was Cousin's radio home for over a decade. Come out this Sunday and see a great lineup of blues starring the Silvertones, the Two Tones, and Sonny Collins at Poor David's Pub. KNON is honored to have had a true Dallas radio legend on the air with all of our great DJs. Join KNON DJs and special guests celebrating the life and legacy of Cousin Lenny. All are welcome. Admission is free. Doors open at 5 p.m. Barbecue sales from Red Hot and Blue, serving pulled pork, barbecue chicken, Grandma's signature potato salad, downright addictive barbecue beans, and collard greens will benefit KNON. A collection will be taken to help with Cousin's funeral expenses. The Silvertones, the Two Tones, Sonny Collins, and special guests in a KNON Sunday Blues Social. This Sunday at Poor David's Pub, 1313 South Lamar in Dallas.
If you're going on summer vacation but aren't planning on taking your old car with you, why not donate it to the KNON Vehicle Donation Program? Just call 877-KNON-AUTO and we'll arrange everything from picking up the vehicle to providing the necessary paperwork. Your donation will help support KNON. 877-KNON-AUTO or on the web at knon.org.
KNON thanks Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions for their support of KNON. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions provides KNON all our copy services. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions sells, leases, rents, and services a full line of color and black and white Canon copiers with scanning, printing, and faxing capabilities. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions offers wholesale packaging back to the consumer market in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Overstock, demo models, and used equipment with full warranty is available. For more information, 214-431-5191 or BEYERimaging.com.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. We have a couple of tickets to give away. Rocket Radio's 10th anniversary with Spoonfed.
You're listening to North Texas.
That's not what we want. Why is that on continuous play? Let me take it off of that so I don't do that again. Rocket Radio's 10th anniversary with Spoonfed Tribe, Dead Skeleton, Twin Shape, Micro D, DJ Sets Film, Live Art, all hosted by Cyberina Flux. It's going to be this Saturday, July 9th, 8 p.m. Is when the door opens. It's going to be at Club Dada, 2720 Elm Street in Deep Ellum. We have two pairs of tickets to give away, and if you'd like to go, give us a call. Alex will take the phone call, or Thomas will take the phone call. We're just all staffed here today. I'm so impressed.
We are.
I know, we are. So give us a call. The number is... 972. I can't read numbers at this hour. 972.
He's so old.
I am. The number's Metro. 972-647-1893. And that's tickets to Rocket Radio's 10th anniversary at Club Dada in Deep Ellum. 972-647-1893. And I did that without looking at it because I know our phone number. Our guest today is Don Mason. He is the director of, he's the president and CEO of Aid Services of Dallas. And, Don, how many people have you actually housed over the years?
Well, according to our database, as of yesterday, 1,815, give or take one or two.
That's a lot of people. It's also a lot of people that you've lost.
Oh, yes. Yes, especially in the early days. 1,017,311 nights of housing.
Wow.
That's
impressive.
Counting one person, one night.
That's impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Multiply that by a 4 or 5 and you have David's age.
Do you know when the first time you housed a straight person was? Was it from the beginning? Was there always just that?
You know, I wasn't there in 1987. I would imagine there were... Some. I remember a young woman with a child mm-hmm. that lived at Ewing, had to be 1989.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, we had straight people when I started. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we don't really, I mean, that's not a criteria, but, you know, it's mm-hmm. we might track it in case notes, but.
And I understand that, and I'm asking, that would be kind of anecdotal. It's one of those things when you're just living together, people just become people. And it's just that most people think of this as a gay disease or, oh, it's become a disease that people in the straight community can contract also. But my point is, you've had straight people living at Ewing since the beginning, really.
Always. We've had children. Yeah. We don't track the sexual orientation of our children because they don't even know what they are. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we have. I have 31% of our residents are women, mm-hmm. 69% men. And the last time I looked, it was 83% persons of color. Mm-hmm. That emanates from pretty much all gay white men back in the early days of our organization. It has become very, very diversified. Mm-hmm. And it will change as the disease changes.
The demographics have definitely changed.
Very much so.
HIV/AIDS over the last, you know, two decades, for sure.
Very much so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Huh. Right now, you're raising money for housing more people with HIV by working with other organizations, doing some advisory work. And you're looking at me.
Like, you want to... I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. Advising a group that's doing housing for the elderly.
Oh, no. We're co-developer.
Or you're co-developer.
Yeah, we're a co-developer of some senior housing projects mm-hmm. Throughout North Texas with a for-profit partner. And we use our experience and history and our status as a community housing development organization, and we bring our tax exemption to the table, which makes the construction and the financing of these projects more affordable. And we earn developer fees, which fund our AIDS programs. It's another way we've diversified our income so that we're not totally dependent on Ryan White funds or HOPA housing opportunities for persons with AIDS through the HUD. We diversify our funding sources and also bring money in that's unrestricted because grants don't pay for everything. There are lots of things that are partially financed and I need unrestricted money to cover the gaps in funding sources. So yeah, and we do advise. You just lost me there for a minute. Yeah, we have a...
It's early. It's only 2 a.m.
Yeah, really.
But you bring an enormous expertise. I mean, a wealth of experience and organizationally.
You're
to
calling
the
him old now.
Yeah, really.
You know, between us,
she hasn't stopped with our ages. You would think Patty, who's all of 27...
Thank you.
Yeah, uh-huh. When HIV first, caring for people with HIV first started, a lot of the programs were based on care for the elderly. Isn't it interesting that now things have flipped, that there's been such intensive care for people with HIV that housing for the elderly is now being based on how we cared for people with HIV?
You know, I never looked at it like that, but I mean, I knew it was primarily assisted living and palliative care when I first started. And I suppose you could take that model and say it's a model that is appropriate for seniors. We wanted a model where we could adjust services for people as they need them, be in their face when we had to be and out of their face when we didn't have to be there. But in many, many cases, we do have to be in people's faces because they can't walk or they're blind or they have all these other difficulties associated with AIDS, and some of them are not associated with AIDS, like mental health issues and such. We learned from those models, but we also, I think, created our own model. We knew it had to be done. All we were lacking were people and money.
But it sounds like a core pillar is to keep independence where it's possible.
Absolutely. We've always believed in that.
And I
self-empowerment.
Think that's so true. I mean, if all of us want to you know, to when we reach a certain age, which is a long way away for me, by the way.
Me too.
And Dawn too. And so here we go. But we all want that dignity that comes with independence and not feel like, oh, we're a burden to others or...
Patty, you know. I hope to become a great burden to you someday.
I bet you do.
I do.
He's going to have a little bell. I bet that thing's going to not live very long. No bell for David.
What is that Joan Crawford and Betty Davis movie where she's upstairs with the bell?
Yeah.
I thought it was a hanger. No, never mind.
That's a different movie.
What are some of the things that you brought over to these projects for the elderly that you found worked for HIV? Some of the some of the ideas of not being in people's faces, giving them their dignity and their independence as much as possible.
Well, actually, we brought a lot of that to the table when we did our first project in Mesquite, which is a 200-unit new construction project. And we shared with our co-developer our policies and our philosophy, and that carried over into all the other projects. So as these projects go on now, we've got a 127-unit project in Richardson undergoing construction right now. I'm supposed to be at a construction meeting at 10 o'clock to see how they're coming along. But in these days, there isn't a whole lot because we've already shared that information. We now kind of have it down pat, and we watch these beautiful, beautiful projects under construction and then fill up rapidly and operate impeccably. They've been very successful ventures for us, and I hope our co-developer has learned a lot from us over the years. We've certainly learned a lot from them. These are huge multi-million dollar projects.
And are they going to now come in with you and help develop some more HIV housing?
I don't know. Of course, we have our site on some property in North Oak Cliff. We have some zoning issues to resolve, but I'm part of a group that's dealing with that. And hopefully, if we're ever able to utilize the three lots that we own, we can go after some tax credits. And we're not that far along yet that I can go to an architect and say, I want a building that's so high and so big, because right now I can't do that on those three lots. But anyway, that's...
Okay, so when are Delia and scheduled to be on? And
Hey, she's great. She's great.
Let's talk about what's going on with HIV right now. The Texas legislature just did a wonderful job. One of the things that they cut was money that basically what it does is if you're indigent, cannot afford your medications. The policy has been that it's much cheaper to keep you alive with a drug, and we will buy it in bulk, and we'll get you your medications, and when you're healthy, it's much cheaper for you to take one pill a day rather than for you to show up at Parkland 10 times during a year.
Not to mention the prevention consequences of keeping people on the meds with the lower T cells and the less likelihood of spreading the disease.
Do you want
me to comment on the legislature?
Get the button ready.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So they've cut a lot of that funding. You won't be able to get these drugs quite as easily now. How's it going to affect you, and would you like to comment on the legislature?
Do you have a 7-second delay button?
Yes, we do. It's right
push
up
it.
There.
You push it now.
Where it says dump?
Well, I suspect that we're going to see people become seriously ill again. We were talking earlier about the early days before we had meds, and people had a life expectancy of about 6 months. So I suspect we're going to have more people in severe need of housing.
It's that cycle where you lose, you're sick, you can't stay at your job, you lose your job. Then you lose your job, you lose your house.
Exactly. That's the
or
first thing.
Yeah. And boom, you're a sudden need.
Right. And you end up at the bridge or under the bridge.
So despite the cost of this medication, isn't it cheaper generally to just get people their medication?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
I mean, there's a lot of science
just
behind
my
that.
Logic, yeah.
But I don't think the Texas legislature is renowned for looking at science. But push the button.
Well, one quote that I have from you that I use repeatedly is, well, that's just legalized murder.
Did I say that?
Yeah, you did.
Oh.
You did. But that is basically what's going to happen, that some people
certainly.
Who are on their medications, or more likely people who are not in this program yet but will get to the point where they need these medications, won't be able to get them. And if you have no way of getting them, within Dallas County, I was at one of the county commission meetings, and John Wiley Price was the only person who recognized that these funds are being cut. Somebody from Parkland was there, and he said, well, how is this going to affect us? The first person said, well, it's not going to really affect us. And so Price kind of looked at him and asked somebody else who was from Parkland and said, do you understand the funding that I'm talking about? We're talking about funding for AIDS medication. And if the funding is cut, how many people are not going to get their medications that we're going to have to cover here at the county? So at least at that level, the understanding is, in Dallas County, we're not going to let people just get sick and die just because of this legislature. We're going to do what we have to do, and what's it going to cost us? I'd like a report, please.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, and some if we care about life and we are moral people, and I hope we all try to be that, then someone's going to carry the burden. It's going to be the local taxpayers.
Well, and what's really sad is if, in addition to that, if you wanted to just look at people as taxpayers, is the more independent a person can be, the more they can maintain their jobs and continue to pay taxes.
Absolutely.
And, you know, now suddenly we've got a person who's not only in need of help from the people around them, namely our community and our society, but now they're not paying taxes in the same way they were before.
Correct.
You know, it's a simple math if you have that kind of a brain.
Sure.
You know, I don't get it. But then there's an awful lot going on in the Texas legislature that are a lot different priorities than a lot of other people in the state, you know, would choose.
Like what?
That's true.
Like what? I didn't find anything odd about any of the things they passed this session. Did you?
Oh, well.
Push the button.
Yeah, push the button. Push the button.
If we want a good, I need to contact, now that the session is over, I need to contact Wendy Davis and get her on. Because
thanks.
She had the best comment about this legislature. She said she started going to work, and she was really confused, and it was difficult to work with, and it wasn't until she finally understood that some of these people in this session are simply not human that she was able to go home and go to sleep at night.
Ding, ding, ding. That must be it.
Simply not human. That was her explanation.
Explains everything.
It did explain a whole lot of stuff. We're talking to Don Mason. He is the executive director. He is the president and CEO. You are not an executive director. You're way above that.
Oh, way above.
You are the president, Your Honor, Your Highness. He is the king of AIDS Services of Dallas, has been there for 76 years.
And 22 years, 5 months, and 6 days, please.
But who's counting? We'll be back talking about housing for people with HIV and other related and non-related topics right after this.
KNON 89.3 FM is broadcasting Democracy Now!, a national daily radio news program covering today's news and issues. Democracy Now! Is hosted by Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez, broadcast worldwide on over 900 stations, pioneering the largest community media collaboration in the country. Democracy Now! Can be heard on KNON Mondays through Thursdays from 8 to 9 a.m. Not the same old news heard everywhere else. It's news of the people for the people. Democracy Now!, Monday through Thursday mornings at 8 a.m. on KNON 89.3 FM.
Dallas Voice, a Texas LGBT media company, has covered news, entertainment, culture, and opinion in the North Texas LGBT community for more than 25 years. Every week, Dallas Voice reaches more than 45,000 North Texas LGBT readers in print. DallasVoice.com informs more than 170,000 visitors every month, with breaking news appearing throughout the day, every day in the Instant Tea blog. Dallas Voice is proud to support KNON Community Radio.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Caffer here in the studio with Patty Fink, and our guest is Don Mason from AIDS Services Dallas, and also with us today is Alex the intern, and Alex has been in Japan for a month.
Yeah, 3.5 weeks. Yeah.
And you just got back?
I just got back last Friday.
Did you see any of the devastation from the tsunami?
No, we spent some time in Tokyo, Kyoto, and Hiroshima, which are all pretty far away. Mm. The school was pretty, you know,
so
not going to
learn. In school?
Yeah, I went with school for a Japanese language class.
Because you're majoring in school in broadcasting and Japanese, right?
Not anymore. Oh. No. Actually, international relations and minoring in Japanese, hopefully.
And broadcast.
they make it way too difficult to get into that.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Well, we're happy.
So if they're listening, they should know. You make it way too...
So konnichiwa?
Konnichiwa.
And we want...
Japanese?
Yes, of course.
Well, heya no naka de neko ga imasu, which means in my room there is a cat.
I know konbanwa from Kevin on Iron Chef America, where he says, is that how you say it?
Yeah, konbanwa.
Yeah.
It's like good evening.
Yeah. Mm. So, this one. Wealth of Japanese in my vocabulary.
Awesome.
And that is one of the shows that we've never had on KNON, so become more fluent and then you can... do the Japanese show.
Sounds great.
It's really a smart venture for a guy your age who is very, very young, especially when you know, it's a market that's, you know, going to be, it is already today booming. So, you know, that's going to be a great career path. Mm-hmm. Opportunity to be fluent in Japanese would be super.
Yeah, I'm excited. Mm-hmm. It's hard, though.
Have you recovered from the jet lag?
No. It's probably 9 p.m., well, 9:45 there, p.m., today, Wednesday.
The reason he's here is he can't sleep.
I'm so
it's not even bedtime yet.
I was so excited to learn you were going to be here this morning, but it is just a fluke, because we probably won't see you again at 7 a.m. too many more.
You never know.
Although, you never know.
This could linger on forever.
Although there is that new A-line, which... connects in with
yes.
the Green Line, so you can get down from Denton really soon.
But how early will I have to leave?
I have no idea what time you'd have to leave, but time doesn't mean anything. And if you notice, his red hair is growing out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate everything you do, Alex.
Absolutely,
and
it's fun.
And a tremendous supporter of the show, and helping us with our website, and
right.
iTunes,
and
podcasts.
If you missed any of this show, especially my brilliant opening where I was babbling for I don't know how long... Alex will have it up online at lambdaweekly.com
Indeed.
Later, and you can listen
yes,
to it.
Yes, I guess that's good since it's so damn early.
That's right.
Our guest today is Don Mason. He is from AIDS Services of Dallas, which is the AIDS organization basically that does the housing piece of the AIDS care puzzle. And you know, it's interesting how in Dallas especially, all of the different HIV organizations work together. There's not the competition. Like, you didn't go out and say... you know, I really don't like the way the AIDS Resource Center is doing education, so I think we'll do some of that too. And I don't like the way the clinic at AIDS Arms is working, so why don't we open our own? You carved out your own niches and then worked together, like AIDS Interfaith Network has the transportation, the main transportation piece, and takes people from their appointments to the pantry.
Yes. I mean, that was an evolutionary process. I mean, I think the early days, I think it was kind of cloak and dagger, and there was a lot of infighting and a few tour fours here and there. In our case, we knew that housing was where we needed to focus because we had slums, and we had to fix them up. We weren't particularly proud of what we were doing, The only saving grace was we were putting a roof over somebody's head, and they were surrounded by people who cared for them. Until we had the money and the expertise that we learned on the job training to really make these places I could live in. And Mike Anderson, my COO, he had the same philosophy that I did. Yeah, we in fact, when I started, we had a program in prevention for the deaf community, and it was a very excellent program. There's nothing that could be said that was bad about it, but it did kind of divide our attention into two arenas, if you will, two separate funding streams. Also, the Centers for Disease Control funds prevention, and our then Texas Department of Health also provided some funding for that, and then our housing component, which is primarily through HUD and some Ryan White funds as well, and state funds also. But that program eventually was not refunded and went away, and it was kind of a blessing, not that that program should not continue somewhere, but our focus needed to be on housing. So, yeah, we've all developed our expertise in certain arenas, and some of those turf wars ended as a result of evolution, I guess. As I know, in our case, putting blinders on and keeping our focus on what we're here to do is what's important, and I think that has happened with all the different agencies in town.
Mm-hmm. So either you have baton passing that happens on a daily basis, depending on what your client's needs might be.
True, yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that happened at least 10 years ago used to be, if you wanted to be a client of Resource Center, you registered there, and if you needed to be a client at AIDS Arms, you register there, and now you register at just, is it three locations, one of three locations, four locations, period, for all AIDS services in Dallas.
Wow. Well,
so it's, I mean...
That's how...
instead of duplicating services.
Push the button. That's, yes, it looks really good on paper.
Oh,
but the reality is that... Mm-hmm. I don't know what the various agencies mm-hmm. have in terms of criteria, but I know that we're required to maintain information and collect data for the different projects that we have. And no universal application is going to capture that information. So there's less of a burden, mm-hmm. certainly, but still we have to go beyond that when people come to us. Just because I have to capture the data necessary to report to HUD. And, for example, the AIDS Interfaith, they don't have to report to HUD. They don't know what we have to capture. And the Resource Center and Nelson T. Parkland doesn't capture HUD data. Mm-hmm. But that's where we come in. And, of course, they have their own stuff. And certainly Parkland has stuff I've never heard of that they have to capture. But, but it is simplified because most of the information, most of the data will come from that centralized intake process and minimize the burden mm-hmm. thereafter.
Well, at least some basic information about, you know, who the person is and some demographics and, you know, some basic information, and at least it's an awareness.
Correct.
It's just an awareness.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned you have 1,000 volunteers. So what
more
kinds of stuff
1,000.
Could a person get involved with to volunteer their time? Say they've got some time, maybe some one-time things. They would say, I've got a long weekend coming up, or you know, some vacation time that I've got to use before I lose it, and I'd like to help somebody, or something I've got every Wednesday evening I've got free, whatever it might be. What are
or
some things
part
that
of their parole, they need to do some community service.
No, okay,
well,
we've
done that too.
I know, sure.
I mean, sure.
Patty is a good example of that. That's why she's here.
one shot volunteer activity would depend on the skill set of the person calling. I mean, if there's an electrician that's licensed and we need some electrical work done, great. If we have some electrical work to be done. A lot of one-time volunteers would work in food service, for example, serving residents at Hillcrest House or Ewing or Revlon or Spencer Gardens. We have group projects. Kansas State University sends young people down every spring for alternative spring break.
Really?
Yes, and they do things that my maintenance staff doesn't have time to do, like build a beautiful hardwood conference table that would probably cost a fortune on the market.
And that you use a lot.
All the time.
That Kansas State project has been going on for years.
Oh, 10 plus, yeah. Maybe 12.
How did that get started?
Why
then?
Well, we were the first AIDS organization in Texas, to my knowledge, that had a web presence back in 1995. And there was a faculty member at KSU in Manhattan, Kansas, that was web savvy and found us. And she called and said, hey, we want to start this program called Alternative Spring Break. And we want to give our students an opportunity to learn more about HIV and AIDS. And how about you take 10 kids and you have them for a week and it's free labor. So each year we look around for a project that we would like to do, like build a pergola over a pond or build a pond or do things that we can't fund with grants that require labor, and they go to town for a week. This year they helped us with our No Tie Dinner and Dessert that we have every March, and they helped staff the event, and they also helped the neighborhood, the Lake Cliff neighborhood. They planted, I forget how many hundreds of trees in Lake Cliff Park.
Awesome.
Alongside the residents who helped with that project, too.
Which is one of the things that I was getting to, because I had heard about that project. Isn't it therapeutic and wonderful for people who are in this housing project because they just have no place to live and can't or can't care for themselves and they need this kind of special care? Now they're getting out with other people and improving the whole neighborhood.
Well, that's who we are and what we're about. Why the neighborhood likes us now.
Well, and isn't that ironic that, you know, it goes in with, you know, that you're destroying the neighborhood and yet you've been on the tour of homes, you know, and you can say to these demonstrators, I'm sure that their houses have not been. But your people are planting trees in the neighborhood. I'll bet none of these demonstrators have ever planted a tree in the neighborhood.
I think the people that were demonstrating years ago are
gone.
They're dealing drugs somewhere else. I hope. Shame on me.
Well,
push the button.
And sure, Oak Cliff has changed a lot since then.
Oh,
but
definitely.
But you know what I'm saying. Isn't that an amazing change in what has happened with AIDS services, that it wasn't just, you know, originally it was buying this slum. Now this slum is a model for the for that area, but is also improving the neighborhood.
Well, we live in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the neighborhood is home for 166 people as of yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to be part of their community. Mm-hmm. And need to roll their sleeves up and get involved and meet the neighbors and know them. Mm-hmm. You know, when neighbors know each other, that makes for a safer environment for everyone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I know, you know, I work from home during the day, and we get those alerts about missing pets or break-ins, random, and it does feel safer knowing that I can share that information with others and keep an eye out.
And
every time the dog barks, run to the window.
We also like to integrate the neighborhood into who we are, too. We open our conference room with a beautiful hardwood conference table to the Lake Cliff Neighborhood Association when they want to have it, when they need a meeting space. The same with different groups around town that want to meet somewhere. DIFA, Purple, the Bears.
Mm-hmm.
Groups that need a conference room.
And meeting space is sometimes hard to come by for groups, you know.
And we've got it. And if we're not using it, it's open.
Mm-hmm.
That's
my
awesome.
Spanish class met there.
Well, speaking of protesters, did you guys notice last year at Pride in Dallas that we didn't really have any protesters in their normal location? And I was kind of disappointed.
You miss them?
Yeah, I feel like we're not really doing our jobs.
Do you know where else there were no protesters?
Screaming at us.
The night after the New York same-sex marriage law passed, the Equality March took place in downtown Dallas. About 150 people were there, you know. And what surprised me was that on the route that they took, which was from the JFK Memorial around Neiman Marcus and back, there wasn't a single protester. this is the night after same-sex marriage passed, doubling the number of people who are covered by same-sex marriage in this country. I mean, that was an amazing piece of legislation that passed. But along the route, they had one lane of traffic open on the streets downtown. So for about seven blocks of the parade route, there was one car that could pass alongside the parade, and everybody was going thumbs up. There wasn't anybody along the parade route who was hissing or hollering or anything. It was all thumbs up along there.
Wow, that's amazing.
Which, that's a change.
It is a change.
That's an unusual...
Now, how can we have that in the heart of Dallas, Texas, and have such an idiocy in Austin serving in our legislature?
Look at the electoral map. It's a sea of red, and then a little tiny blue square.
You know,
and
majority,
that's us, and I'm proud of it.
But the majority of Texans now, as of the 2010 census, live in urban areas.
Mm-hmm.
The minority now is rural Texas. So, you know, maybe we'll see some change. And maybe, you know, maybe we'll have to use the button less.
And Don, I want to thank you for being with us. Don Mason is from Aid Services Dallas. Our guest next week is Reverend Steve Sprinkle, from the first openly gay professor at Bright Divinity School at TCU.
And Dr. Sprinkle is a treat.
He is.
So,
and so we'll be torturing him next week, getting up at 5 in the morning to be here. And
David will be a week older.
I will be. And this is the part of our program where our producer, Thomas Pearson, comes in and disavows any knowledge of our existence. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly next week.
For listening to the KNON Morning Line, we'd like to remind you that the views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNON 89.3 FM.